because just feel like it'd be a good time to break with Genesis, maybe come back to it later on. All right, so Genesis 5, this is the book of the generations of Adam and the day that God created man. In the likeness of God made he him. Male and female created he them and blessed them and called their name Adam. So you might notice there, please, that male and female were known as Adam. So there was a person named Adam, and the human race was known for a little while as Adam. And in the day when they were created, they were called Adam. In verse 3, and Adam lived 130 years and begat a son in his own likeness after his image and called his name Seth. All right, and the days of Adam after he had begotten Seth were 800 years and he begot sons and daughters. Okay, so you see what we're getting into here. Look at the last part of the chapter, verse number 30. And Lamech lived after he begat Noah 595 years and begot sons and daughters. And all the days of Lamech were 777 years and he died. And Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begot Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And then you see in chapter 6, we have, in chapter 7 and chapter 8, we have the story of what? The flood, that's right, the story of the flood. And then in verse number 9, or chapter number 9, verse number 1, chapter 9, verse 1, God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. So it's almost like we get another start. Take two, okay? Because it's after the flood and we have them being told almost the exact same thing as Adam and Eve. And you're going to find out it's not the exact, but it's almost the exact. And we'll talk about that later on in weeks to come when we get to the flood story. But you'll see there that we're talking about what happens after the flood. And then look at verse number... Verse 28 of chapter 9, and Noah lived after the flood 350 years, and all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. Now these are the generations of sons, chapter 10, verse 1, these are the generations of the sons of Noah. Okay, so we see that we have getting to Noah in chapter 5, and then we have Noah's kids in chapter 10. Okay, so that's pretty easy. He only has three sons, they're all with him on the ark. So Genesis 5 genealogy gets us to Noah. Genesis 10, we start with the sons, all right? You can see that continues all the way through the end of the chapter. So we have almost two complete chapters in Genesis. You know, the series is Genesis 1 through 11, and two of those chapters are genealogies, okay? So it's at the end of the chapter then. We see in chapter 10 and verse 32, these are the families of the sons of Noah after their generations. And you see in chapter 11, verses 1 through 9, we have another scenario. We have another episode here. It is the Tower of Babel, isn't it? You see that? Now look at chapter 11 and verse 10. These are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and begat Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. Okay, so this is really interesting stuff here. Because if you'll see through the end of the chapter, what do you have? More what? So really, you have, of the 11 chapters in our series, almost three of them are genealogies. So we can't very well say we've taught the whole series and still say, yeah, we skipped three chapters because no one wanted to read the begots. Now, if you really want a blessing to your heart, probably tomorrow for your devotions, you should read the first eight chapters of 1 Chronicles because that's all it is. Just so-and-so begot so-and-so. And then I think in chapter 4, they take a break for Jabez's prayer and then they come right on back to so-and-so begot so-and-so and it continues for eight chapters. So that'll just warm your heart. You need to do that for several. You need to do that for several weeks, probably. I'm surprised Jim Hartman's not in here. A lot of the hecklers are traveling this week. How frustrating, indeed. And maybe the Lord knew that's... Huh? Yeah, that's true. You're not traveling. We may keep you busy doing attendance for the next 30 minutes. We'll be all right. So, all right, so let's see if we can talk about the genealogies of Genesis. All right, so let's remind ourselves here. I've done this once before, and we're going to do it again just so that I can... I'm going to make this statement, and then I'm going to show you what I mean, and then I'm going to prove it, okay? So here's the statement. The statement is that from chapter 5 through chapter 11 is just one big genealogy. Just one big genealogy. In other words, if you took out two things, it would be nothing but genealogy, okay? So here goes. So what we want to do is show you how we got from Adam to Abraham in this genealogy. All right, so here's chapter 5. This section right here counts as chapter 5 genealogy. And your job is to get us from Adam to Noah. Adam to Noah. Really, Adam to Noah's children. Okay? And then we're going to shove something in here that has something to do with Noah and his children, known as the flood. Chapter 6, 7, 8, and 9 takes place right here. And then we want to talk about Noah's children. And so we come back to the genealogy, and I'll show you that in just a moment. And that's chapter 10. And at the end of chapter 10, the earth was divided in those days. And then we stick right here in this aisle, another episode known as the Tower of Babel. And then we come back after the Tower of Babel and talk about one particular line of Shem's children. And Shem is one of the sons of Noah, right? And so you're going to see in just a moment that really these three sections of chairs could be shoved together and no one would know any different. We could have one section of chairs in here and no one would come in and say, you know what, I think there are some aisles missing. Unless, of course, you were trying to get to the center chair, right? Then you would think, boy, they need aisles. But what we're talking about is the book of Genesis has two really big parentheses or parenthetical episodes in chapters 5 through 11. One of them is the flood, the other is the Tower of Babel. But other than that, you have one big genealogy. It's from chapters 5 through 11. Remember, the whole idea of this huge genealogy is to get from Abraham to, or rather, from Adam to Abraham, way over there by where Walter's at. So we have Adam to Abraham. And so when we get to Noah and his children, we talk about the flood. So he takes a break from genealogy, talks about Noah and his children, the flood. Comes back to the genealogy, talks about Noah's children, gets all the way up here to Shem's children, takes a break, says, let me tell you a little bit of something that happened, the Tower of Babel, and I'm going to show you that connection in a minute. And he comes back and says, now let me tell you about one particular line from Noah, that of Shem. And then he takes us to the line of Shem all the way up to Abraham. So he's getting narrower and narrower in his goal here. Okay, because remember, God is selective. He can be. So I want you to see the connections. And I'm going to prove to you, real quick-like, that we have a connection here between this chair and that chair, between the genealogy of chapter 5 and the genealogy of chapter 10. Okay? In other words, remember, this aisle right here is Noah's flood. Okay? All right, so let us see some connections. First, look at chapter 5 and verse 31. Chapter 5, verse 31. All right. All the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. Okay, so what we see there is the father of Noah, his life is summarized, his number of years are summarized, and then, okay, so we find out the son that we want to talk about, we talk about the other children that were born, we talk about the rest of his years, and then the phrase, and he died. Then we get to Noah. You see that, by the way? See that verse 31? Everyone see that? All the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. And Noah was 500 years old, and Noah, now this is strange because this is the first time in chapter 5 where we see more than one son mentioned. Okay, let me give you an example. Look at chapter 5, and let's say, look at verse number 4. How many sons of Adam does it mention? Just one, and he names him, Seth. Then he gets to Seth, and Seth, we're told, has many sons and daughters. Do you see that in verse number 7? Seth lived after he begot Enos 807 years, and he begat sons and daughters. But Moses says, I don't want you to know about all those sons and daughters. I want you to know about which one. Which one? Which son of Seth? Enos. And right, verse 9, Enos lived 90 years and begat Canaan, and Enos lived after he begat Canaan 815 years and begat sons and daughters. But Moses said, I don't want you to know about all those sons and daughters. I want you to know about one. Which one? Canaan, right? All right, gets to Canaan, verse 12. Canaan lived 70 years and begat Mahalalel. Canaan lived after he begat Mahalalel 840 years and begat sons and daughters. But Moses says, I don't want you to know about all of Mahalalel's children, sons and daughters, or Cain's. I want you to know about one of Cain's sons and daughters, and that's his son, Mahalalel. Got it? But he gets to Noah, and it says Noah had three sons. He's 500 years old. And Noah begot Shem, Ham, and Japheth. What I cannot tell you is that Noah had sons or children before those three sons. Because there is a phrase missing when it comes to Noah. Noah lived look at verse 30 of chapter 5. Lamech lived after he begot Noah 595 years and begot sons and daughters. Who did, Lamech or Noah? Lamech did. All right? So, but then it stops with Noah having Shem, Ham, and Japheth. It doesn't talk about Noah's one son. We'll get to that. He picks one son. Moses, the writer, picks one son later on. But he tells about the three sons of Noah here, first time it happens. And then he gets to the break. And then you look at chapter 6 and verse number 1, please. And it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them. We're going to get into that probably next week if I can keep things moving here, okay? Because that's quite an episode. All right? Now, I want you please to look at chapter 9 and verse 28. Look at chapter 9 and verse 28. If you look at chapter 5 and verse 31, fold the page over in your Bible so where you go from 531 to 928, you're going to see it's a continuation. Let me read them together for you. 531 and 32. All the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died, and Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, 1028. And Noah lived after the flood 350 years, and all the days of Noah were 950 years, and he died. It's just a continuation. It's one genealogy. But he steps away from the genealogy, or I should say rather crams an episode in the genealogy known as the flood. Well, I'm glad he did. Sort of need that information, don't we? So you can see there's a connection here, hopefully. Now look at chapter 10 and look at chapter 10 and verse 32. Chapter 10 and verse 32. So we get done talking about these are the families of the sons of Noah. So in chapter 10, we have three sons that are talked about. They're the sons of Noah: Shem, Ham, Japheth. All right? We're looking at chapter 10, aren't we? Look at chapter 10 and verse 2. There's Japheth. Look at chapter 10 and verse 6. Who do you see? Yep. Now look at chapter 10 and verse number 21. Who do you see? Shem. So we have Shem, Ham, Japheth. So chapter 10's genealogy is about the three sons of Noah: Shem, Ham, Japheth. Okay? So we look at chapter 10 and verse 32. We see these are the families of the sons of Noah after their generations in their nations, and by these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood. Now look at chapter 11, verse 1. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. Okay? So we're about to get some light. Okay, hang with me now. Chapter 10, verse 32. What's the last thing we hear from chapter 10? The earth was what? There was a day when the earth was what? It was divided. After the flood, the earth was divided. Now, if you're the reader, you're thinking, how did that happen? Because it is divided when the reader reads it, yes? And it is divided when Moses writes it, yes? So probably, you're going to want to know how it was divided. And so Moses says, let me take a break from the genealogies and tell you how it was divided. So we get to the Tower of Babel, this aisle over here. And we'll get to that probably and whatever. All right, so let's rehearse. Let's rehearse. Probably think, man, I wish he'd hurry up. Well, the reason I'm not hurrying up is because I want everyone on the train. Okay, so here we are, chapter 5. Adam to Noah and his sons. Ah, something happened with Noah and his sons. The flood. Chapter 10. Japheth, Ham, Shem. Chapter 11. How the earth was divided. Now what? Okay, we're going to come back to something in particular. Look at chapter 10 and verse 22. Chapter 10, verse 22. The children of Shem, Elam, and Asher, and Arphaxad, and Lud, and Aram. Okay, so how many sons did Shem, the son of Noah, have? Isn't this great? Noah had three sons. One of them's name was Shem, and it looks like he had Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. So five sons. So we find out from this middle section right here that Shem, one of the sons of Noah, had five sons. All right? Now, look at chapter 11 and verse 10. These are the generations of Shem. Shem was 100 years old and begat Arphaxad 2 years after the flood. Now, isn't Arphaxad one of the sons of Shem listed in chapter 10 and verse 22? He's the second one listed, the third one listed, right? Everyone with me? Okay, so again, chapter 11, verse 10, the genealogy picks up, and where does it end? End of the chapter. Who does it end with? I hear it out there. Abram, right? Okay. Does everyone agree? Everyone see the genealogy ending with Abraham? All right. So let's ask some questions here. What should that tell you, the student of the Bible, about the purpose of the rest of Genesis? Chapters 12 through 50. What should the ending of the genealogy over there with Abraham, not saying you're as old as Abraham, what should that tell us about the purpose of the rest of Genesis? That's right. So we're going to find out about Abraham's line now. It stops at Abraham because now we're going to hear the story of Abraham. All right, the story of Abraham starts in chapter 12. And then he has two sons around chapter number, well, he has a son who is not counted as a son named Ishmael around about chapter number 18 or so. Chapter number 19, or rather chapter 19, 20 in there, Isaac comes on the scene. So Abraham has two sons, and God gets selective again. Remember over here, he goes from Abraham to Noah, and then he talks about Noah's three sons, and he ends with Shem, and he comes back in chapter 11 after the Tower of Babel, and he starts with one of Shem's sons. Question, all of Shem's sons, important? Important, made in the image of God? So important, I mean, arguably, but God says, I'm getting to Abraham. I'm picking one of the sons of Shem. I'm picking one of the sons of Noah. So he gets all the way to Noah. He lists all three Noah's sons. He says, I don't want you to necessarily be concerned, as far as Genesis is concerned, with all three sons of Noah. I want to focus on Shem. And so he gets all the way up here to Shem and tells us about five sons of Shem. And he says, I don't want you to know about all five sons of Shem. I want you to know about one of them. The one that's going to lead us to Abraham by the name of Arphaxad, who was born 2 years after the flood, says chapter 11, verse 10. Everyone with me? And then Abraham, we'll find out later on, has two sons, Ishmael and Isaac. And God says, but I don't want you necessarily to be concerned with Ishmael and Isaac. I want you to be concerned with Isaac. Isaac has two sons, Jacob and Esau. But God says, I don't want you necessarily being concerned with Esau. I want you to be concerned with Jacob. Are you with me? All right, so Genesis is all about God taking all of humanity in Genesis 1:26 and narrowing it down to a specific line known as the line of Abraham. So, why this huge cacophony of chairs? It's so that you can get to Abraham. So the rest of the book can tell you about Abraham. God is selective. And no one's going to tell me it can't be. So if there's a lesson you get out of the genealogy, is that, yes, everyone's made in the image of God. Now that everyone feels flowery, let's retract and say, hey, God will pick whoever he wants to. There was a lot of people to pick from. So, anyways. Alrighty, now that we're done with the connections, let us talk about reasons for genealogies. The reason you're asking why it doesn't say sons and daughters is why, Brian? In chapter 10, verse 1, you notice that it doesn't say unto whom are born sons and daughters. Why do you care? Why do you notice that being a problem? Because if I didn't know chapter 5 existed, I'd say, it's just the thing they did back then. They didn't mention the daughters. But in chapter 5, what did they do? They mentioned daughters. Unto them were born sons and daughters, right? So you see a difference between chapter 5 and chapter 10, and you're wondering why it's there. Is that correct? No, that's what you're wondering, right? Well, the amazing thing is, yes. So let me get back to that in just a moment. Yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself. The truth is, I want to go on Greg's question, because if we get to it on my list here, that's fine. We'll just mull on over it. But you'll notice, Jason, you go to slide 4 there. You can get there for me. Yeah, you'll notice that one. Yeah, thank you. This is Luke chapter 3. Jesus himself, when he began to teach, was about 30 years of age, being the son, as was supposed, of Joseph, the son of Heli. Now you notice 13 verses later. The son of Shem, the son of Noah, the son of Lamech, the son of Methuselah, the son of Enoch, the son of Jared, the son of Mahalalel, the son of Canaan, the son of Enos, the son of Seth, the son of Adam, the son of God. So, yes, Luke uses this very same genealogy in Genesis to show to us that Jesus has a line, and it was spelled out in Genesis. Now, the reader of Genesis, why would he give a rip about the genealogy? What is he reading in Genesis 5? He's reading the law of Moses. Kings were required to read the law of Moses. Priests were required to read the law of Moses. Genesis is part of the law of Moses. What would be the perspective of the person reading these genealogies? Getting to Abraham? Maybe. But what is the bigger thing we've already studied in Genesis that they would be anticipating? The coming Messiah we find first promised where? 3 what? 3:15. Let's look at it quickly. Genesis 3:15. So God is talking to the serpent who beguiled Eve. And he said, I will put enmity between thee, that is the serpent, and the woman. And between thy, the serpent's seed, and her, that is the woman's seed, Eve's seed. And it, that is Eve's seed. shall bruise thy, that is the serpent's, head. So Eve is going to have a son that is going to bruise the serpent's head. And while he's doing that, thou, the serpent, shall bruise his, that is Eve's seed's, heel. You see that? So all the way from the beginning, they're expecting the one. The one. Who is the one that is going to come and crush the serpent and take the curse away? So yes, the reader of the genealogies, Brother Greg, is expecting a deliverer. And so Luke knows that. Luke is exactamundo. He goes all the way back through not just Abraham. Matthew goes back to Abraham. But he goes back through Abraham all the way to Adam. All right, so chapter 10, verse 26. Joktan begot Almadad. And you just want to hear me read these, don't you? And Shelef and Hazarmaviv and Jerah. And remember, the key here is to read them so fast that no one can see whether or not you're pronouncing them right. All right? All right, so your question, if I want to rephrase it, and if I'm missing it, please tell me. Your question is, why are we narrowing it down to Abraham, and yet there does appear to be a concern with these other children? Okay, I would like to say, and this is a guess, but it's an informed guess. Later on, remember when I just said a few minutes ago that you had Abraham had two sons, and God wanted to focus just on Isaac. Do you remember I said that? And then Isaac had two sons, Jacob and Esau, and he wanted to focus just on Jacob. Okay? Esau had, of course, a family. If we were talking about multi-level marketing, he had a downline. Just kidding. And that'd be a joke to only some of you. So he had some people that were known as what? Anyone remember what they were called? Edomites. People of the red, or Edomites. All right. But here, you would wonder, why are they telling us about the Edomites? It's the strangest thing. Four or five times, just in the book of Genesis, it says this, Edomites, which are of the children of Esau. Why is it telling us that? I don't care. The fact is, if Genesis is just about telling us about Jacob, why is it telling us about his brother's seed? Why? I don't know. Why? Okay, here's why. Later on in the book of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy is written also by who? Moses. So if Moses wrote both Genesis and Deuteronomy, and then people come into Israel, and God says, stay away from that land over there. That belongs to the Edomites. I've given that to them. Well, the reader wouldn't have any idea who the Edomites were in Deuteronomy if he didn't spend a lot of time in Genesis talking about the Edomites. So there's some help there. I appreciate that. Other people, why would we care about Lot's children? Lot, remember, in Genesis chapter 19, Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed. Lot is in the cave with his two daughters, and they think they're the only ones living on the earth. They have incestual relationship with their father, and because of that wicked encounter, you have the Moabites and the Ammonites. Why would we care? Why would Moses even mention them? Probably because later on in Deuteronomy, God says, I've given that land to the Moabites and the Ammonites. Leave them alone. Well, if we're in Deuteronomy, we don't care about the Edomites and the Moabites unless we know something about them from Genesis. So, while I'm saying that God's focus is towards Abraham, that doesn't mean he doesn't also mention some things that come about later on in the drama of Abraham. Here's another good example. I'm sorry for all these examples. You might remember in Genesis chapter number 37, Joseph, one of the sons of Jacob, is sold where? Into Egypt. Do you remember who it was that took him into Egypt? Who did his brothers sell him to? The Ishmaelites. Well, why would we care? Who are they? We wouldn't know them if we didn't know something about Ishmael in Genesis chapter 18. So I'm not saying, and I appreciate you bringing that up, because I don't want anyone thinking that everyone else is just kind of happenstance. No, every part of human history has God's fingerprint on it. Because if you're in Deuteronomy, you're thinking, wait a minute, why does God care if the Edomites, the Ammonites, the Moabites have their own land? Well, because they are kinsmen of Abraham. You know. So I hope that helps. All right, Brother Jason, can you take us back to slide 3? And then give me my control back, all right? Thank you. You're so gracious. All right, so why do we have genealogies? Number one, to remind us that everyone other than the 8 died in the flood. All right, to remind us. Now, all right, let's just look at chapter 5 again real quick. Look at it with me. Look at verse 4. The days of Adam, chapter 5, verse 4, after he begot Seth, were 800 years, and he begot sons and daughters. Okay, so we have many lines beginning with Adam, right? He had sons and daughters after he had Cain, Abel, Seth, right? By the way, of course, we understand Adam didn't personally have any of those children, right? Yeah. All right, look at verse 7. Hopefully we understand that. Seth lived after he begot Enos 807 years and begot sons and daughters. We have hundreds and thousands and millions of people on the earth by the time of the flood. So this is a reminder in chapter 5. Every time we read and begot sons and daughters, we're reminded that God is selective. And that many, 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 many sons of Adam died in the flood. Many sons of Seth died in the flood. Many. So, number two, it's a reminder of the curse of death. Remember chapter 2, God told Adam and Eve in verse 17, of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat of it. For in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. Do you remember that? Chapter 5, look at chapter 5 again. Look at the end of verse number 5. You see those three words? And he died. Look at verse 8, end at last three words, and he died. Look at verse 11, end at last three words, and he died. Why does Moses have to say that? Why? The fact is, death is something that is used over 70 times in the book of Genesis, and all but one of those times it is clearly speaking about physical death, clearly speaking about physical death. The first and only time it is used is the only time where it could arguably be talking about some other sort of death. But we're not free to say, you know what, God, 98% of the times you use this word, it meant physical death, but here it meant something else, Genesis 2:17. So when God told Adam and Eve, when you eat of that tree, you're going to die, they were as good as dead men. They were as good as dead. And chapter 5 is a testament to that fact. And he died, and he died, and he died, and he died. And so Genesis chapter 5 is a reminder to us that death is still alive and well. Did you know death is 100% It is 100% effective. It gets everybody. It has gotten everyone except Jesus and two others. Who are they? Enoch and Elijah. And if people are right, they'll get their day too in the book of Revelation. So it touches everybody other than those of us who are living, and we will have changed bodies if the Lord should return while we are still alive. All right, we already talked about the one Greg mentioned. We already looked at the genealogy. Let's look at a fourth reason for the genealogies. A reminder of the Hall of Faith. Where's the Hall of Faith found? Yeah, so let me just throw that up on the screen there for you. Here's Hebrews 11. When I say the Hall of Faith, I'm saying in Genesis chapter 5, we're getting a good idea of who is important to God. What is important to God? How important it is to God. Remember, right here is the big deal. Without faith, it is impossible to please Him. And so, we find in Genesis chapter 5, we find Enoch. Actually, we don't find Abel in chapter 5 at all. Genesis chapter 5, we find the genealogy of Seth, but Seth was Abel's replacement, remember? Y'all remember that? Seth is a good picture of Christ there, okay? Death takes away Abel, and so we get a substitute from God, Seth. Okay, so Seth is a great picture of Christ. But anyway, you have Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, all mentioned. Remember, these are four people that are important, but Enoch, Noah, and Abraham are all in the big genealogy found in this room in these sections of chairs. So we're finding out where these people came from. By the way, would you even know much about Enoch if you did not have Genesis 5? Look at Genesis 5. Look at it with me. It's the strangest thing in the world. Why in the world do we find something about Enoch in here? Look at verse 21. Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. By the way, Methuselah, his son, was the longest living man ever in the history of the world, as far as we know, 969 years. Verse 22, and Enoch walked with God after begat Methuselah 300 years and begot sons and daughters, and all the days of Enoch were 365 years, and so we find one exception to the and he died. Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. All of a sudden, no one could find him to say, and he died. He just simply was not. He was not? What are you talking about, he was not? What does that mean? That means that no one could confirm that he died. Hebrews 11 tells us the same thing. Other than Hebrews 11 and Genesis 5, we only find one other place where Enoch is mentioned in the Bible, and I showed it to you 2 weeks ago, where he is named as a prophet. And what is he prophesying? Of the second coming of Christ. Back in Genesis 5? Yes. Enoch says, the Lord comes with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment upon all and to convince all that are among them of their ungodly deeds, which they have ungodly committed, and hard sayings, which ungodly sinners have committed against them. Jude verse 14. So, three places Enoch is mentioned. Genesis, Hebrews, and Jude. So if we don't have Genesis 5 genealogy, we're missing a major thing. What are we missing? That there is an exception to death. That's right. Here's what Hebrews 2, chapter 2, verse 16 says. He came in the likeness of flesh that he might destroy him that had power of the death, that is the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. The fact is, everyone is afraid to die to some degree.
Not me.
Okay, well, we'll check on you on your deathbed. But the fact is, what you ought to figure is, if the rapture doesn't happen, the fact is we find hope in Enoch. Now, why is it? Take a good look at chapter 5, verse 21, 22, 23. Look at that for just a moment and give me an idea of why you think it is that Enoch is mentioned and why he was perhaps allowed to be the only exception other than Elijah and the bringer of life, Jesus Christ. Why? Say it again. He walked with God. Robin nailed it. He walked with God. Here's the fact. Did you know that we don't see that happening since the garden? So here's a man that said, I don't care. Remember, in Jude, he's called the seventh from Adam. So here's what Enoch said. I don't care what my father, grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, great-great-great-grandfather, or the son of Adam himself do. I'm going to walk with God. Was Adam alive when Enoch was walking with God? Do you think they talked a little bit? Probably. Remember, it wasn't just those two on the globe. I mean, there were sons and daughters being born all the time. Remember, we talked about that Numbers the last 2 weeks. We've talked about that. But think about how meaningful it is for a man to be given the only accolade of walking with God since Adam and Eve did it in the garden. Maybe that's why he was taken. He spent so much time with the Lord that he just went home with God one day. I don't know. But that is significant. All right, then, lastly, this is a reminder of the earth's age. The fifth reason for these genealogies is a reminder of the earth's age. Now, Brother Dick taught, I'll be right with you, brother. Brother Dick taught May 6th, I think. That sounds right. May 6th. And he taught and he showed some charts dealing with who lived and then they lived and then they lived and these people saw each other because they were alive at the same time. You saw those charts if you're here. And if you're on my email list, you saw them again this week if you open them up. Okay. If you didn't file it. I mean, I don't forward much. In fact, I don't think I've ever forwarded you anything. So humor me sometimes and open the email. All right. So I'm not going to sit here, we're not going to sit here and discuss again ad nauseum for the third or fourth time in the last month what these years mean and how probably there is only two transmissions of oral tradition from Adam to Noah and then again from Shem to Abraham. I mean, that is pretty significant since there are 10 generations from Adam to Noah and 10 from Shem to Abraham. That's pretty significant, 10 generations each. All right, so, but what we can do is if we start at a particular known event that people will attest to, like, say, the flood or the existence of Abraham or the building of Solomon's temple, we can use genealogies and the length of people's lives to get to a day of creation. Okay, and that's what many people have done. James Usher, Bishop James Usher did that, and he says creation is at 4004 B.C. And so, we have already thought a little bit about this as the pastors. It's not a part of our statement of faith, but here on this page known as Contemporary Issues, the pastors have written up several paragraphs, and we actually wrote one on evolution. So, here we are. We accept the Genesis account of creation that God created the earth in 6 literal days, and we believe that man came by direct creation of God and not by evolution. We believe the genealogies of Genesis 5, 11, and Matthew 1 offer sufficient proof that the earth is thousands, not tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions or billions of years old. Furthermore, we believe as Adam and Eve fell, all creation fell into corruption. There was, of necessity, no death or corruption on earth before mankind's existence. This makes good sense in light of there being only 6 days of history prior to mankind's special creation. Do I know that there are men who love the Lord and believe the Bible who disagree with that? Sure. Sure. And I'm over it. Okay. So, I mean, there's nothing to talk about. I believe verbatim what Scripture says. Is it possible that not every person in the genealogy is spelled out in the book of Genesis? Sure. But you're still not talking about a humanity that's older than a thousands of years. You're still in thousands. You add in 80 here, 60 there, 40 there, 50 there, 60 there. Okay, you're still not into tens of thousands. Okay, so I'm going to give the liberals their what if and say, yeah, okay, maybe there's some people missing in the genealogy. Okay, that still doesn't mean that we are 20,000 years old as a human race. That's excellent. That's a good question. He says, if I'm restating this, tell me, okay? He says, if Enoch is a sinner, how come he did not have to die and he still was able to go be with the Lord? Talk about Enoch. Death is a part of the curse. Enoch did not die. He went to go be with the Lord, and yet he's a sinner. How is that possible? Is that pretty much what you said? Okay. I want to ask you a question. Okay? Here's the question. Are you a sinner? If the rapture happens today, will you go to heaven? Why? Maybe Enoch had faith. So what I'm saying is, perhaps God gave Enoch a rapture of his own. Changed him, because 1 Corinthians 15 says, flesh and blood will not inherit the kingdom of God. So he says, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. In the moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, but we, the living, shall be changed. For this corruption must put on incorruption, this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruption shall put on incorruption, and this mortal shall put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. So there are two ways for death to be swallowed up in victory. Either your body is changed at the resurrection, or your body is changed at the rapture. Either way. So you're either going to go by way of death or the rapture. If either way, you die. In other words, your old body dies even at the rapture. It's going to be dead and changed. I'm not saying it's going to disappear. It's going to be changed. Walter thinks, my dear brother Walt, thinks that probably the two witnesses in the book of Revelation are Enoch and Elijah. Okay? And let's just say that that is true. Okay, then they'll both have the opportunity to die. And that's that. Okay. Let's just say it's right. Okay, I'm going to say it's right for now. Any other comments or questions? All right, well, that's it. Let's have a word of prayer.